Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The elements of Debbie Mazar's signature look, the black hair, the matte red lips, the blue eyes, are nowhere to be seen in her role in the new Mike Myers comedy about a super secretive society. Yeah, it was them that faked the moon landing. In the Netflix series, The Pentaveret, Mazar sports a giant blonde cotton candy-like hairstyle, hazel contact lenses, and mauve lip gloss to play a character named Patty Davis, the executive assistant to the five characters who seem to be silently and secretly running the world. Here's how they explain it.
In 1347, five learned men realized that the Black Plague was caused by fleas on rats. However, the church believed the plague to be God's punishment, labeling these five men heretics. So they formed a benevolent secret society to influence world events known as the Pentaveret. Throughout the centuries, there have been many secret organizations. What makes the Pentaveret different? They're mice.
Yep, that is Jeremy Irons. But what is Patty's role, really? Most recently, we've got to spend some TV time with Debbie Mazar and her role as the artist Maggie on Younger. You know her from her film work, Goodfellas, The Insider, her recent turn as Ava Gardner in the Spanish miniseries Arde Madre, or maybe you remember her from your club days when she was the elevator operator at Danceteria in the 80s. The Pentaveret drops on Netflix today, and Debbie Mazar is our guest. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning to you. So your character, Patty Davis, without giving too much away, when we first meet her in that room, how would you describe her role in this secret society?
Well, Patty is the only person in the cast who doesn't actually live at the Pentaveret. She comes from Massapequa, Long Island. She takes like the railroad to get to this like secret location. But she is a very passionate, hard worker. One of Mike's characters is Lord Lordington. He's kind of the head of the Pentaveret, and he has given her, you know, executive privilege. So she knows more than anybody in the room. Basically, she's been taught, well schooled, and she's there to basically save the universe. She's a lot of fun. She's bright, she's happy, optimistic. But you know, for me, it was actually really interesting because I had to learn, like, you know, this dialogue that was all physics and legalese and also like littered with comedy. It was just so much fun to play her. Oh my God, I really had a blast.
I tried to describe her look. How would you describe it, and how did it help you get into Patty?
Well, you know, when I got the phone call from Mike to do this part, originally Mike was supposed to play the role. He plays eight characters as it is. And I think as for the ninth character, they decided to have a woman play it. And when he called me, I hadn't worked with him since a film 100 years ago. So I Married an Axe Murderer. So I was a little bit worried because the way it was written, I sort of saw it as almost his ex-mother-in-law, Linda Richman, who he did on Coffee Talk for SNL.
The best.
So which was fabulous. But I was a little bit nervous because I wanted to make Patty my own. And he was very generous. And he really allowed me to develop the role, let it grow. And he was like, well, I want to change your eye color. I have green eyes. And he wanted me to like completely like change them. So we got contacts. And I'm like, well, look, instead of being a brunette, why don't we just make me a blonde? So we went, you know, it's broad because the whole thing is, it's a broad comedy. So I have like this sort of bobblehead blonde wig, fake nails and the brown contacts. And my outfit's always like a uniform with like a sort of vintage walkie-talkie. The sets are vintage, kind of modern. Mm-hmm. And it was just so much fun. It was like going to comedy acting school because as an actress, you know, I do drama, I do comedy. I'm known, in the business for being able to improvise really well on the spot. But this was like completely written. So it was almost like doing a play in a sense, because I really had to stick to the page. There, you know, for me, there wasn't a lot of room for improvisation. And I was working with sketch artists and stand-up comedians, Ken Jeong, you know, Keegan-Michael Key, Richard McCabe, Jennifer Saunders. And, you know, I wanted to, my character kind of keeps them all grounded in reality. So it was important for me to try to find like that fine-tuned place where, even though these are almost larger-than-life characters, to bring it to a level where I could play in the arena of these like stand-ups that are like, you know, acting really big, you know, mm-hmm. and feeling like, oh my God, I don't want to be a cartoon character. But my character is the one who keeps everyone based in reality. So it was a really interesting mix. It was very, for me as an actress, challenging because, you know, you want to keep it real and make it funny, but also make it believable. You know, when you're in the moment of watching all this insanity, watching Mike transform himself into 8 different characters was incredible. He's very intense. There's a lot of, you know, hair and makeup, you know, body suits to change his physical appearance. Him going in and out of dialects. I would sometimes lose focus because when you watch Mike work, you're like, oh my God, he's a comedic genius. And for me as Patty never sits down in the show ever. So I would have to go around this literally 50-foot table where all the characters are seated and do my monologue. I think I did like all my scenes 1,000 times over and over because I'd have to pass each character and then repeat it for each character that he played. I was the first to arrive and the last to leave the production just because I had to stay for every character that he played. So it was fantastic, very challenging.
My guest is Debbie Mazar. We're talking about The Pentaveret, her role as Patty Davis in the new next Netflix film. I want to play one of those scenes where you're describing, where you're walking around this table. And it's the first time we meet Patty, and she introduces herself to the audience and to the newest member of The Pentaveret. This is Debbie Mazar as Patty Davis.
I'm from Massapequa, Long Island. I like to call it matzo pizza because it's half Italian, half Jewish matzo pizza. Isn't that cute?
Thank you.
Listen, you're part of a very powerful organization that'll finally allow you to shine. Some people, by the way, would kill to be in a secret cabal.
I like your background music there, too. What questions or Mike did you have about Patty as a character?
Well, you know, he wanted her to be Jewish. I really was trying. You know, it's funny because obviously I have, you know, my own accent, which is, you know, a New York accent. He wanted me to like amp it up to make it more like what he wanted. So I was trying to, you know, just trying to find the fine line mm-hmm. of, you know, trying to get away from sounding like my friend Fran Drescher or, you know, a cartoon character. That was my biggest concern, but I let it go at a certain point because she was so full and so much fun. And as the show progresses, you know, into it's 6 episodes, but as it goes further in, Patty has so much responsibility. And she has this very special relationship with one of his characters named Lord Lordington, who's the oldest member of the Pentaveret. And he, Mike just wanted to make it like that was her father. Hmm. So we had this sort of, Mike became like this paternal guide for me throughout this whole production, where, you know, he is the boss of the show. He is the showrunner, the writer, the creator. He plays every character. He's in the editing room. So for me to have this relationship, it was very nurturing. I didn't have a lot of questions because it was mm-hmm. very well fleshed out on the page. And he also would go, you know, I think that you should have this scene instead of one of my characters, and like throw like a 6-page scene of a long monologue at me. I'm like, we're going to shoot this tomorrow. Like, what? you know, so it was fun. I had to really focus super hard, and we shot it in London. Mike is from Canada, but his parents are British, so I think there was a tax incentive. But shooting in London and working with all these wonderful actors, and getting to like discover also being on location. I've never spent that much time in England. It was just wonderful. But yeah, no, my relationship with Mike and in terms of Patty, everything was really on the page. I didn't have many questions because we kind of ironed it out in the beginning, got the physicality going, got the look happening. And you know, he was just like, hey, slow it down, you know, enunciate. I want to hear the words crystal clear. He's really specific. He's very, very trained. So I felt like I was in like a comedy camp in England for, you know, 2 or 3 months.
I heard you earlier use the word generous to describe him. How does that translate on set? What does that mean in terms of the day-to-day?
It means that like, okay, and this is not just for me, for everyone. When you do a scene, you're trying to make Mike happy because Mike is like the boss, basically, even though like Tim is an incredible director, but it's, you know, it's all about Mike really. And after each take that he loves, he starts clapping and then the whole crew claps. And it was that way for everybody. He'd come over and like, you know, basically like it was like having an acting coach. Okay, take this slower, hit this nuance a little bit harder. He would say like, did you eat? Do you have any water in your trailer? can I offer you, I've got like an espresso machine in my trailer. Would you like a coffee, Debbie? Because he knows that I like coffee. We're in England and I didn't, you know, I like tea as well. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I'm a coffee drinker. And just, you know, making sure that you were, you know, fed. He's very paternal. You know, he's a family man and always asking, how are the kids? You know, how did you sleep?
are you nice. Okay?
Yeah, no, really lovely. Really lovely.
You mentioned Tim and it's Tim Kirby who directed. Yes. He's directed some great comedies, Veep, Fleabag, Grace and Frankie. Yes. What is something that you worked on with him that really helped you?
Nothing really. I mean, that sounds horrible to say that. I mean, he just was there and present for me. Mm-hmm. When I come to work, I'm open. I'm your puppet. You're the director. You tell me to jump, and I say how high. And he was just very collaborative. He allowed me to play. He allowed me to go bigger. I guess the one thing that he helped me with in retrospect that I'm thinking now, because I don't think about these things when you ask me them ahead of time. He helped me to be larger because as an actress who does comedy and keeps it real, I don't tend to go really big. You know, I hone my craft. I think about it, I try to make it real. And he helps me because in this alternate society, in this other universe, the rooms were so big, the sets were so big. There's so many over the top moments that he would help me to get to a place where there was that fine line of not going over the top, but taking it up a notch. And we had a lot of COVID, you know, it was in London, it was during a lockdown. We had a lot of COVID things going on and, you know, just, it was like people were dropping like flies on the set. So he really had to like run a tight ship. Mm. They had to figure out scheduling stuff. You know, he was always just helpful, always with a good, kind word. To make you feel like you were, you know, doing the right thing and not being over the top and allowing you to have that second, third take if you felt like you needed it. I guess that's how he helped me.
My guest is Debbie Mazar. We're talking about her role as Patty Davis in The Pentaveret. Not Patty Davis, Ronald Reagan's daughter. Just to be clear. You mentioned COVID, and early on, you had COVID. You had pre-vaccination COVID.
Yes, I did. Oh,
gosh. First of all, how are you doing?
Well, I had COVID March 2020, and it was so funny because I got it. I'm doing well, thank you. I actually got COVID again, and I'm going now for a PCR test today just to keep on checking. But, you know, my first COVID, I ended up going to CityMD to get a test because nobody had really any tests. They're like, we only have like 5 and you don't meet a criteria. I'm like, well, I was in Italy 2 months ago. I've tested negative for influenza A and B. Can I please have the damn test? When I finally got it, I was so sick. I almost died. I mean, I was very, very ill. I had a lot of long-term effects. Mm. And then after three vaccinations, I got my second COVID in Italy. I'm assuming it was Omicron. I don't know. You know, we never know which mutation we have. But even with the second one, it wasn't like, oh, I'm asymptomatic. It was pretty bad. Mm. I think because I've been a smoker for a long time, for many years, my lungs are probably not as strong as other people's, and COVID likes me. Then there's like my husband, who I coughed all over. You know, I didn't have room to, go into a separate bedroom. You know, in New York, we only have so much space. And my husband has never gotten COVID from me.
Oh, wow.
It's interesting. I think some people just have a certain blood type and they don't get it. But yeah, no, I'm doing okay. I'm going to a doctor today because I have a lingering cough that I just can't shake. I'm not smoking, and I have a lot of things that I think are COVID related. I hate to use the word long-term COVID because I don't know. You know, we just don't know what's going on. But, you know, I'm thinking I should take like that second booster. Yeah. I'm a little bit scared to like keep on pumping all this crap in my body. But I do believe that after having it so bad the first time and it was a little bit lighter the second time, like I don't want to mess around. I really do think that the vaccinations are helping me to stay out of the hospital.
Well, knock wood, everything continues at least on an upward trajectory for you health wise.
Yeah, let's switch subjects.
Yeah, no, but I'm curious, how are you thinking about the world differently in the past 2 years? I interview a lot of creative people, and they've all had different ways of processing.
Yeah.
They feel like different people on the other side. Maybe they feel differently about their art.
Well, you know, I am going into a transition that started several years ago, pre-pandemic. In 2019, my husband and I decided that, you know, me being in my 50s, I was like, you know what? I have one kid graduating high school in Brooklyn. I have another one going into high school. Why don't we just move to Italy? Because my husband's father had passed away and his mother was like, why don't you take this house? I have a little apartment next door. You know, in Florence, in like, you know, up in an area called Fiesole, which is I'm surrounded by olive trees. And I just thought, you know what, why not take a new journey? So pre-COVID, we made a decision to move. During lockdown, where I got sick, I couldn't go anywhere. And I just started packing up my house. And in retrospect, I had decided to make a move. And then when all the pandemic happened and watching people die in the pots and pans and the banging constantly, people dying, and the way the world shifted, and the way the world is changing with the internet and the obsession with celebrity and things that don't really matter to me anymore or never really did, and the trajectory of where the world was sort of going, I just felt like I needed a personal change also for my career to sort of, you know, fill the cup with new experiences, to be able to, as an actress, to have a different journey so that I could have offer my career something different. You know, I mean, I've lived in New York, I've lived in Los Angeles. I you know, and for me to move to Italy, it's been amazing. I moved 2 years ago. I spent 7 months of these 2 years shooting Younger during lockdown in New York, which was a very sort of weird, dark time being alone without my family. Then being in London, shooting The Penteveret. And now I took the past like 7 months just to unwind in Italy, unpack my life, look at nature. I started, you know, tilling the garden with my husband. We're growing vegetables and, you know, making my home beautiful, getting animals. I got more dogs. I feel like Bruce Weber. I've got like three dogs now. you know, my daughters are in school. They've adjusted, you know, one speaks three languages, Italian, Spanish, the other one speaks two languages. You know, my oldest daughter, she took a gap year from college. She went to college, dropped out, and is having her gap year now. And she's like, you know, going to Barcelona, you know, with her girlfriend. They find an Airbnb, Israel, Paris, you know, Venice, Rome. You take the high speed train, discovering a whole other world. And, you know, then we have the war that broke out in the Ukraine, and Italy is very dependent upon Russian energy. So, like, when the war first broke out, all the schools stopped having heat. They're like, okay, send your kids to school with, like, a coat. And it became, and it's very close to us. It became very real. A lot of Ukrainians are coming into all over Europe. And you're watching people at fashion shows, which, you know, I guess the world has to go on, you know, but like, I don't care about your outfit. I don't care what you're wearing. I just, you know, like I like doing what I do. I like acting. I'm sort of shy about like the whole, party scenes and thing. There's just a lot of things that I don't care about anymore that I know that people are like, what, you don't want to go to a fashion show? Like, no, I like to see clothes. That's really nice. But I like the camera pointed in the direction of the runway, not of like in the direction of who's watching the show. Or those, you know, those kind of like things. I feel like there's living in Italy for me has been wonderful. I have an electric Cinquecento. So I have this like little car. I drive. I go down these windy roads. I discover nature. I discover churches. I go into museums. I find these secret gardens that are, you know, from the Renaissance period or Etruscan era. I see wild boars and different types of animals crossing the road. It's like I feel I pinch myself because it's such a fun new journey, and the world. You know, the world is as crazy as it is right now. You know, like I have two daughters, you know, that are 16 and 19. And the idea that like, you know, they might end abortion, you know, the things that are going on in America and just all over the world in general, you have to like go, okay, let me live my best life and see how I can, you know, almost just save my family, save my children, you know, keep them positive. And I feel like the Pentaveret, to circle back, is also has a subliminal messaging because Mike wrote it with, you know, over a period of several years where, you know, he saw in the direction of how the world was going. So a lot of his characters have like these incredible speeches and aside from the comedy, and it's about saving humanity. Love, kindness. I mean, you know, thinking about things that actually matter. And for me, you know, that's what's interesting is like when you sit with yourself and you're still and you think about what's important, you kind of get off social media for a second, you know, or get away from your phone. I think social media is like ruining everything for the kids. So, you know, when people said, oh, New York is dead. I love how, you know, Fran Lebowitz said, you know, New York, it's ever changing. It's the kids that are going to bring it back. You know, it's like for us as we grow, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's not like it used to be. Well, nothing's like it used to be. You know, so we have to keep on like, you know, reinventing stuff. And I believe that, you know, the kids are the future. And unfortunately, you know, the phones aren't going anywhere. And neither is social media. So for me, I'm just trying to like, you know, I stay on my children and try to like, you know, have a very positive outlook on stuff. You know, when everything seems dark, you know, I'm kind of like the big cheerleader who tries to make sense of it all.
You sound really good and grounded.
I try. I really try. I mean, you know, we're all only human and we all have our days where, you know, the world just seems so scary, but you just got to get out there. I mean, you know, I lived through the AIDS, you know, epidemic, you know, I lost so many people. And this is a new pandemic. You know, they're not so different, except, you know, now at least, you know, there's medication for, you know, HIV and for COVID. But, you know, we as human beings are really strong. And I believe in humanity.
Debbie Mazar has been my guest. You can catch her in the Pentaveret. She's really funny and really good. Debbie, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. I'll see you soon in New York.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.